for religious worshipers. And so she, you know, she can make strong recommendations, but, you know, I do think that because the Jacobson Court carved out that little tiny exception, you know, a lot of states have taken advantage of it, but several courts very recently, including courts out of Kentucky and North Carolina, they've said that, you know, even with the state-friendly, through the state-friendly lens of Jacobson, you know, there are still limits on the power to deal with emergencies, and governors can't exceed their boundaries, which Governor Brown has
done. I think if anybody else has a question, you can either tell me via chat, or there's probably a button you can use to say raise your hand. So if anybody does have another question for Ray, go ahead and try to do that, and I'll see if I can figure out. This is the first time I'm managing all the buttons and whistles on a Zoom. I've been on other Zoom calls. So phase two, what can churches do today?
Well, according to the Oregon Health Authority, you know, churches can host up to 250 people within their boundary, within their walls, as long as they can maintain safe social distancing. You know, this it's definitely far less restrictive than the 25 person limitation was under phase one. However, you know, it's still a restriction. I mean, you know, I attend a church here in the Salem area that can host, you know, without social distancing, 1,100 people. And in the sanctuary itself, it can host roughly 600. So, you know, I do think that, you know, it can host multiple people within the building and social distance safely well over 250 if it wants. And it should be given that discretion, especially since bars, restaurants, breweries, and other dining establishments, you know, no restrictions are placed on the number of people they can pack in, as long as they can, you know, maintain safe social distancing within the walls of their establishment. They can pack in, you know, however many people they see fit, and churches are in the best position to determine how many people they can squeeze in, while still maintaining social distancing. Basically, Governor Brown's action says that she doesn't trust churches. And, you know, the case I mentioned out of North Carolina says, well, you know, if we can trust people to, you know, social distance in, you know, in the workplace or in other facilities or in grocery stores or wherever else, we can certainly trust churches to maintain social distancing within their walls.
And protesters and rioters and looters, they can be trusted to maintain social distancing, and they can meet in whatever large groups they want to, and nobody says word one about that.
Right. And well, that there we're starting to get into a little bit of free speech, but you make a valid point, because basically it's, you know, if people can gather together in mass and not worry about social distancing for purposes of expressing outrage at what happened to George Floyd and, you know, calling for an end to racism in America, then, you know, they certainly can't, you know, silence church viewpoints. Right. They can't silence religious-based viewpoints. So, you know, if a church wants to, you know, have a service calling for racial healing and pack the place out, what is Governor Brown going to say? You know, that, well, you know, this violates my executive order? No. You know, it's like, if it's allowed in the one circumstance, it's got to be allowed in the other. Otherwise, it's not. Otherwise, it violates the Equal Protection Clause. Mm-hmm. It violates individual, you know, rights of freedom of assembly and speech and religion. And, you know, so she can't say it's okay in the one circumstance and not in the other. It's real simple. Yeah. So it's real simple as far as I'm concerned.
Looks like Denny has a question. I'm going to unmute him.
Thank you. Really appreciate that, Jeff. Ray, I just can't tell you how much we appreciate your efforts, and Brad and all the folks at Pacific Justice Institute. We know that that's a contentious battle that you're undertaking. You mentioned you're in Salem. Did you have any participation? There were a group of churches who came together and had some communication, two different conference calls with the governor. Are you familiar with that conversation?
I'm aware that the governor had a conference call, or you know, a video conference with faith leaders across the state. It was somewhere around May 12th, as I recall, and a certain and a couple of different pastors from different parts of the state have actually sent me links to the PowerPoint from that presentation, and I have actually cited that PowerPoint in the briefs that I presented to the Supreme Court. You know, basically, I pointed out that on the one hand, she tells pastors and other faith leaders that yes, you are valuable, that you do help people provide, you know, mental and emotional health in times of crisis and things of that nature, and yet she turns around and says, "But I'm not going to lift the restrictions on you." So it's like on the one hand, she recognizes the good that churches can do, it, you know, as we're facing, you know, not only COVID-19, but you know, the racial divide, you know, caused by the George Floyd incident. She recognizes the good that they can do, but yet she's hamstringing them. And this is a problem. And I think most people, most pastors and other individuals across the state recognize the hypocrisy of her position. So we've pointed it out to the judge. And, you know, we've also pointed, you know, she has it on the record that it will be many, many, many months off. That's on page 9 of her PowerPoint, I think. It will be many months off before she allows churches to reopen again. And churches aren't willing to wait that long. Or at least most churches aren't. I know of some that are, you know, because I've had a few churches that have said, you know, we're setting aside our liberties because we want to save lives. And you know, they've condemned me for, you know, the work I'm doing, but, you know, that I'll save that discussion for another day. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it, hypothetically speaking, a vaccine may never be discovered. A vaccine may take years to discover, and churches, you know, she can't just restrict churches' religious rights indefinitely. And that's the problem.
So if I can follow up that question, Ray, with one more, where do you see this going, and I know you have some allies at the Department of Justice. Recently was on a conference call where the Attorney General of the United States mentioned a faith-based initiative at every U.S. Attorney's office across the country. Have you had any contact with the DOJ, and where do you see this particular case going and the outcome as you see it?
I have not had any contact with the DOJ. I'd certainly welcome a conversation, a meeting, whether it's in person, face to face, or via a conference, video conference, or whatever. I definitely welcome something like that. It's great to have such an ally in a high place. Where this is going, it's hard to say. I mean, right now, I think the odds are overwhelmingly against us, you know, strictly based on the makeup of the Oregon Supreme Court, because there are seven justices, all Democrat appointees. And that's not to say that Democrats can't be fair and objective, but, you know, because I've come across Democrat judges who have been, but at the same time, I also know, generally speaking, that Democrat judges tend not to be friends of religious freedom. That's just an observation I've made. I hope I'm wrong in this case. So we face long odds with, based on the makeup of the court, and based on the both the Ninth Circuit's and the U.S. Supreme Court's rulings in the South Bay United Pentecostal case. So the odds are pretty long. But you know, here's the thing, you know, the odds of David defeating Goliath were pretty long too. You know, so the fact of the matter is, God, I've seen God's hand at work throughout this entire case, from the moment I reached out to pastors in the Salem area and beyond, seeing who wanted to get on board. And all of a sudden, you know, it just kind of snowballed. So I've seen God's hand in this. My hope is that, you know, given how fast things have moved, you know, from, you know, the initial filing in Baker County Circuit Court, all the way up through the filing of my brief last week. I mean, all of that took place, you know, within the span of a month. So, you know, my hope is that the fact that judges have taken a little over a week now to wrestle with this and decide things, my hope is that they're at least giving our position some weight in the consideration that it's due. And so if that's the case, we only need four. We only need four of the seven. If we get four of the seven, that means we win, and the injunction goes back into effect.
Ray, there's a question from Becky. She asks about Washington County being in phase one. They're restricted to 25, but my question is, why were churches restricted from using their bathrooms, using their own common sense to social distance, while Lowe's and Winco are packed with people? Is this religious persecution on its face? U.S. Attorney Barr said they would check states who were discriminating against churches. What could be done at a federal level to help Oregonians of faith to be relieved of this oppression?
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it is discrimination on its face, because, there are people who go to church need to use the bathroom too. I understand that, maybe the crowds at Lowe's or Home Depot or Target or wherever else may be a little bit larger in some, but I mean, the fact of the matter is it definitely does seem discriminatory on its face. And I definitely think there would be grounds for a challenge there. And, going back to one of the cases, the North Carolina case, it said, we trust churches to, the judge in the North Carolina case says, we trust churches to make the right decision. Basically to place heavy restrictions on churches that don't apply to businesses is basically saying, it's treating churches like children. It's saying that, because of your, religious nature or whatever, we don't trust that you're going to make the right decision, that you don't have the smarts or the decency to take action that will protect lives. And that is absolutely ridiculous.
Danny, do you have another question you want to bring?
I just wanted to kind of respond to what Becky asked in the chat room. And by asking Ray, so if we lose at the Oregon Supreme Court, what is the next step?
Well, I think the next step, if any, would be to go. We'd probably go down to the. We couldn't appeal to the Oregon the U.S. Supreme Court. Even if we could, chances are they wouldn't take up the case, especially given their recent ruling in the South Bay United case. So, I'm also wondering. I'm thinking that.